This sermon by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Wednesday evening, August the 23rd, 2006, and is entitled, The Anatomy of Sin, taken from James chapter 1, verses 13 through 18.
Favorite subject? Mine was lunch. As bad as the food was, I still enjoyed going to lunch. But just like there were classes I really enjoyed, and lunch wasn't the only one. I'm just trying to be cute. I know some of you say, try a little harder. But there were also those subjects I just hated. I mean, I didn't like them at all. And one of those was gym class at Robertson Elementary. It wasn't because of the teacher. I loved Mr. Robinson. He was wonderful. What I hated was that president's physical fitness test they made you do every year. Because every year is just another time for me to be humiliated in front of my whole class. I couldn't do a chin-up. And every year they had to record that. You know, it's just a way of humiliating. I hated that. And then when I got to college, there was another class I hated, and that was biology. I don't do well in science. And I tried to explain to my teacher why that was so. And I went to her and I said, Dr. Ogilvie, you understand I'm left-handed. And that means I use the right side of the brain. And as you know, that's the creative side. I excel in creative things, but I struggle with science. And I gave her this wonderful explanation. She didn't buy it. It was a difficult class for me. One of the things I didn't like was all this study about anatomy. I mean, why did I need anatomy? I was a speech major. I was going into the ministry. I was going to be a pastor. Why did I need to understand anatomy? I didn't understand the need for it. I didn't like it. Then I discovered something, and that is, what is anatomy about anyway? Anatomy is dividing into parts for detailed study and analysis to ascertain something's function or how it works. Now, we think of anatomy, we think of the physical body. But the purpose of the study of anatomy is to figure out how the body works. But anatomy relates to all kinds of areas. It's breaking something down in its parts to try to understand how it works and why it works. How it functions and why it functions the way it does. Because that's the definition of anatomy, I think then anatomy is an important thing to study. In all kinds of areas. Tonight we're going to look in James chapter 1 and talk about the anatomy of sin. How does sin work? How does it work in us? What does it do to us and why are we drawn to it? James chapter 1, and let's begin at verse 13 and read down through verse 18. Let no one say when he is tempted, I'm being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and He Himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of His own will He brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of His creation. Okay. Are any of you ever tempted? Anybody? You tempted? Okay. Those of you who are tempted, do you ever give in to temptation? Yeah? Well, then maybe the study of the anatomy of how that's working is fairly important for us to consider. If we are prone to temptation, and we are prone to yield to temptation or give in to it, then maybe it would be helpful for us to have some understanding of how it works. An excellent little book, if you've never read it, I'd encourage you to read it. It's by C.S. Lewis. It's The Screwtape Letters. It is a wonderful little book. C.S. Lewis is just gifted in the way he can tell a story. And so the whole book are just letters written by Screwtape, who's a veteran demon. And he's writing to his little nephew demon, Wormwood. And he's explaining to young Wormwood how to work on his patient and how to cause him to get into sin and how to keep his eyes off of the Creator and how to keep him away from the enemy, as he refers to God in the book. It's a wonderful book that's great insight into how temptation works and how we get drawn into that. And that's the thrust of what James is dealing with in our text. And I think we're going to discover that the anatomy of temptation reveals that each of us is responsible for our own sin. Now, I don't like that any more than you do. I want to blame someone else. I want to be with Flip Wilson and say the devil made me do it. I feel much better if I can give an excuse or give a reason for why that happened in my life or whatever. But the bottom line is, I am responsible for my sin. I will account to God for my yielding to temptation and the sin I commit. The idea that we're not responsible for our sin is common in our culture. We don't like the idea that we are responsible because we live in a blameless society. I mean, you hear it every day in every realm of life. Have you noticed that no one's responsible anymore? You notice that? Have you noticed everybody's a victim? He's a horrible mass murderer, but it's not his fault. It's the way he was brought up. He had a domineering mother, and that's why he goes out and kills women. All these areas, nobody's responsible. We're all just victims. Now, my question is, how can we all be victims? If we're all victims, there aren't any perpetrators. That doesn't fit. But we all want to think in terms of our being victims. We're not really responsible. Somebody else is responsible for that. It's someone else's fault. It's not my fault. Two things I want to call to your attention out of this text. First of all, it's in verse 13 and 14, is the source of our temptation. Where does temptation come from? In this passage, we're dealing with temptation. That is that inward draw towards sin. That inward draw as opposed to that external circumstances. Now look back at verse 2. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and so forth. That's the same word used back in verse 2 as used over here, let no one say when he is tempted. It's the exact same word, but it doesn't have the same meaning. It's the same word, but we have to read it in its context to understand what the writer is dealing with. James begins by saying in our text, don't let anyone say, or let no one say. James is dealing with a natural tendency to blame others. It isn't new to us. It isn't part of our generation. It didn't start with us. This tendency to want to blame someone else started at the very beginning. Do you remember what happened in Genesis 3? Adam and Eve were the crowning point of creation, and God put him in this perfect environment, and he said, the whole place is yours, you have free reign, all of this is created for your good, it's created for you to enjoy, and you can eat the fruit of all these trees, oh, except that one tree. The one tree in the midst of the garden, don't eat the fruit of that particular tree, the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. Other than that, that was the only restriction. And Satan came along and sidled up next to Eve and whispered in her ear and said, boy, you've got it so bad. Did he really say you couldn't eat any of the fruit in any of this garden? Placing in her mind the thought that she's restricted. Oh, no, he didn't say that. He said we could eat all that. But he did say we're not to touch this tree. What did God say? Don't touch it. No, he said don't eat. Oh, well, he's just telling that because he knows if you do that, then you're going to be just like him. You'll be able to discern good and evil. And she fell for it. She took and ate. She gave it to Adam. Adam ate. It's clear in the text. Adam was not deceived as Eve was. Adam sinned with his eyes open. But do you remember what happened when God confronted them? Remember, God came calling and they ran and hid. And finally he gets to them and he says, where were you? And they say, oh, we heard your voice, but we were naked and afraid, and so we hid. You remember what happened? The Lord said, who told you you were naked? Did you eat the fruit? Do you remember what Adam's response is? It's classic. That woman. In fact, that woman that you gave me. She gave to me and I ate. Our first parents in the garden with the very first sin pointed the finger of blame. Adam, it's not me, it's this woman. In fact, it's not even her. As bad as she is, it's you. Because if you hadn't given her to me, this never would have happened. It's not my fault. God made it pretty clear to Adam in the garden, it's your fault. And he dealt with him in judgment. The first thing we need to understand from our text is the source of temptation, driving home the fact that we are responsible for our sin. But would anybody really blame God for their sin? Sure. It happens every day. The homosexuals blame God for their sin. What do they say? God made me this way. God says that particular lifestyle, acting out on that, is sin. But what do they say? It's not my fault. It's the way God made me. It's not my fault. It's God's fault. Alcoholics, drug addicts, others. Hey, it's in my genes. It's part of my makeup. I'm not responsible. It's just... And you and I can point our finger and say, boy, those bad, sinful people. But we do the same thing. We make the same excuse for our sin and our rebellion. But what does James say? James said, let no one say, when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. Let no one say. In essence, he's saying, don't even go there. Don't even try to suggest that. Don't even think for a moment that you can use that as an excuse. Why? Because God is untemptable. God cannot be tempted. It is an impossibility, for sin is totally foreign to His nature. God cannot be tempted, and God does not tempt anyone. Because He is holy, He does not entice anyone to evil. Don't even try to say, I'm being tempted by God. It is absurd. But wait a minute. I just told you. Verse 2 is the same word. And it's pretty clear if you go back and read verse 2 down through verse 8, God's involved in that testing. So can we say God's not involved in our temptation? Yes, we can say God's not. God is involved in our testing, not in our temptation. There is an important distinction between the two. It's not a contradiction. And the difference is in the aim or the purpose. The aim or the purpose. What's driving it? What's the motivation? Why is this coming? It's kind of like the difference between punishment and discipline. What makes something punishment as opposed to it being discipline is the motivation of the one who's exercising it. Now, granted, when my father used to grab his belt and say, bend over, it was hard for me to distinguish between punishment and discipline. Because they felt an awful lot alike. The difference is the motivation behind it. Why is it being done? Is it being done to harm, or is it being done to teach? The difference between testing and temptation has to do with the aim and the purpose. The purpose of the test is to produce endurance and strength. It is to refine and to purify. Look at the passage carefully. That's his whole point of the testing. when these trials, when these troubles, when these hard and difficult times come, the Lord is there to bring good out of that. That's the testing. In temptation, the aim, the goal, the purpose of temptation is to produce evil. It is to weaken, defile, and destroy. The fruit of the test is to purify you in the sight of God, to purify and to mature your faith. The purpose of temptation is to oppose the work of God. The goal and the aim is opposite. That's why James can say, with such force, don't even think when you are tempted that it's God doing. God doesn't do that. Why? Because it's totally contrary to His very nature. It's contrary to the nature and the makeup of God. The one who is described in this passage as unchanging. With Him there is no shifting shadow. There is no seasonal change. Nothing can eclipse it. In fact, the Greek suggests there is no possibility of shift. There is no possibility of change within the character and the nature of God. When we say God is unchanging, or to use the theological term, when we say God is immutable, what are we saying? We are saying He never changes in any way, shape, or form. God doesn't get any older. God doesn't get any wiser. God doesn't get any smarter. God doesn't get any more gracious. God doesn't add anything to His base of knowledge or understanding, because He knows all things from the beginning. Because He is wise and loving and gracious and merciful and wrathful. That's who He is all the time. He does not change. God is not involved in temptation because it is contrary to His nature. Don't even try to say God is responsible for my temptation. Well, if God is not the source, then who or what is? Now, the answer most of us want to give is, well, it's the devil. But James doesn't say that. What does James say? Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and He Himself tempts no one. Rather, verse 14, each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. And the emphasis of the language is lured and enticed by his own evil, lustful desirings. In other words, that's in me. What sin does, what temptation does, is bring the sin out of us that's in there. It doesn't put evil in us. It brings it out of us. I remember being at a conference years ago, and it was a small classroom type setting, and a speaker was trying to deal with this issue and trying to illustrate how temptation brings sin out of us. So he had a glass of water in his hand. He was drinking water, and he stopped and he said, called a guy up and said, would you come here a minute? He said, okay. And he walked up and he stood there holding his glass of water. He put more water in it so it's about 3/4 full. And he said, now, I want you to grab hold of my wrist and just start shaking my arm as hard as you can. And I said, no. He said, do it. So he did. And of course, water went everywhere. And he said, why'd water come out of there? He said, because I shook your arm. He said, no. Why did water come out? He said, because it was near the top and I shook your arm. He said, no. Why did water come out? Because water was in there. What comes out of you when temptation comes is what's in you. See, my children don't make me angry. They bring the anger out of me. They shake me till anger comes out. Nobody can make me angry. Nobody can make me lustful. All they can do is bring the lust or the anger or the hatred or the hostility or the animosity out of me that's already there. And that's what James is trying to drive home. See, we don't like to deal with our fallenness. We like to deal with the fact that we are corrupt. We don't mind saying in a general way that, yeah, we believe in the doctrine of depravity, that that means I am sinful to the core. Not as bad as I could be, but I'm as bad as off as I could be. Everything in me, my emotions, my wills, everything's touched by sin. And as long as we keep it in a theoretical realm and we say it in that way, in understanding the glory and the grace of God in salvation, we're fine with that until we come down to deal with what does it mean to say I'm depraved. It means there resides within me, in the core of who I am, lust and anger and wickedness and every evil imaginable within me. And that's what James is trying to drive home. Warren Wiersbe defines sin in this way. Sin is the unnatural fulfillment of a God-given desire and drive. Unnatural meaning in a way contrary to God's intent. So let me show you what that means. We are created as sexual beings. Go to Genesis 1. Let us make man in our image. So in the image of God, He created them. Male and female created He them. Males and females are different. Males and females are sexual beings that are created to be brought together. And God said to them, before there was ever sin, be fruitful and multiply. Sexual relations is part of the God-givenness of our creation. And it's not just for the purpose of producing offspring. It is for our pleasure. It is for His glory. It's all good and holy. That drive, that desire in and of itself. But when we seek to fulfill that in an unnatural way or a way contrary to what He says, which is in the bounds of marriage, one man and one woman committed in a loving covenant relationship, it's sin. God created us to be sexual beings. But when I seek to fulfill that natural God-given desire in a way contrary to His Word, it's unnatural, it's sinful. And in being sinful, it's not fulfilling ultimately. Hunger. Sex is a God-given desire, drive, that is placed in us as part of creation. Immorality is the unnatural fulfillment of that. Hunger. We have to have food to exist. We have to have food to live. We have to have food to function. And God placed within us a longing, a drive, a desire to have food. You know, what do you say when you have that child and you're trying to get the child to eat and they just won't eat? Well, they'll eat when they get hungry. Because that's built in us. It's natural. It's God-given. Gluttony is an unnatural fulfillment of what God gave us. That's why it's sinful. It's not sinful to eat. It's sinful to overindulge. It's sinful to eat in the wrong way. Emotional well-being. We're created as social beings. We are created to interrelate with one another. And that's natural for us to want to be whole and to be well and to have relationships. But when we seek to fulfill that through controlling and through manipulating others, it's sin. It's unnaturally fulfilling what God placed in me. It's natural to want to succeed. It's natural to want to achieve something. But when we cheat and lie in order to get there, we are fulfilling it in an unnatural way. Now, bottom line. Why are you tempted to sin? You might want to write this down because this is really profound. Why are you tempted to sin? Because you enjoy it. Bottom line. If I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't do it. If I look at every area in my life where I sin, the reason I do it is because I get some fulfillment out of it. The problem with the fulfillment I receive from sin is it's very short-lived. It never satisfies. It always leaves me more empty than I was before. Because it's not the natural way to fulfill that. James says, you need to understand, when you're tempted, it isn't God, it isn't your children, it isn't your spouse, it isn't your neighbor, it isn't your co-laborer, it isn't even the devil. It's you and your own lustful desire, your want, your drive, and you're determined to fulfill it in a way other than God has told us to fill it. He says, in fact, you're lured and enticed. And these are terms from hunting and fishing, just like they sound. The word translated in the English Standard lured means to bait a trap. Enticed means to bait the hook. It's your own longing and desire that causes you to bite, causes you to grab. See, and the problem is our desire blinds our thinking. Our desire clouds our judgment. And we don't realize there's a hook in it until we're already into it. The anatomy of sin reveals to us the true source of our struggle. And it's from within me. Note its offspring in verses 15 and following. Then desire, when it's conceived, gives birth to sin. And by the way, the word that's used there says it's an illegitimate birth. It's not the way it's supposed to be. Gives birth to sin. And sin, when it's fully grown, brings forth death. There's a family line: lust, sin, and death. In contrast to that, in verse 18, is the idea of truth and life and greater life yet to come. So bottom line, what do we learn from the anatomy of sin? We learn that we are responsible to God for our sin. We can't put it off on our environment. We can't blame our parents. We can't say it was Adam and Eve's fault. We can't point at anyone else. We have to say we ourselves are responsible. So if that's the case, how do we respond? By faith. Trusting in the grace of God. 1 Corinthians 10:13. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful and will not let you to be tempted beyond your ability, but will, with the temptation, He Himself also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. In other words, there's nothing comes against you. There's nothing that entices you and draws you along that everybody else hasn't had to deal with. But God is faithful and just and will, in the midst of that, provide grace for you to overcome. And when I don't overcome, it's because I didn't trust His grace. I didn't respond to His grace. I went after what I want, what I desire, what I long for. Before you come to faith in Christ, you have no means to overcome your sin. You are enslaved to your sin. But once you come to Christ and the Holy Spirit is placed within you and God begins to do His work in you, you have an ally. You have power sufficient to overcome. And when you don't, it's because you yielded to your lustful desire rather than the will of God. That's why I stand before God and give an account for my sin. When you're tempted, God provides. So what do? According to Hebrews 12, we lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily entangles us and run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder, the perfecter of our faith. We look to Christ by grace, through faith. That's why we say we're saved by grace. In the beginning, in the middle, in the end, it is all of grace. The same grace I look to Christ for at the beginning of my salvation is the same grace I look for in living out my salvation day by day, growing in Christ-likeness, in sanctification. It is the same grace. And it is that same grace that will usher us into glory. In other words, we need to see temptation for what it is. And when we see it, we flee from it and flee to Christ and trust His grace.
You've been listening to a Bulldogs and Piggies production, a serious podcast with a silly name. Find us on the web at www.pwhatcher.blogspot.com. Bulldogs and Piggies features the preaching ministry of Rod Harris, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.com.